Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
It was all online, Bill. We were going back and forth online. I gotta go. Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2860. Tonight we have a special guest. Her name is Tanisha Bankson from Grenada, Mississippi, a returning NASCA family member who is a child abuse and domestic violence survivor. She's also a newly published author of My Pain is My Power. Now, I am waiting for her to call in, and we've been going back and forth online, and she's supposed to be here. So I hope nothing bad has happened. In the meantime, I'm going to read my mission statement, okay, our mission statement, and that is we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so from two different ways. Number one is educating the public, and especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing to numerous pairs and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I always talk about prevention because, quite frankly, that's a biggie, okay? Intervention is when you speak to a child that maybe is your own child who's been abused, and there's ways of speaking to your child, and it's very important that you do that. And then also, too, if you know of a child who's been abused, you know, down the street or something, I believe it's everyone. No, everyone should be a mandated reporter. The best thing to do is to, is to sit down and talk to that child and maybe start about other subjects, whatever, and so the child feels comfortable with you. And then ask them, hey, how are you doing? Is everything okay? And, and a lot of times the child will open up and say, no, I'm not okay. That's intervention. And then, of course, if need be, you know, never raising your voice or getting angry, you make a phone call, okay? All right. And that's called intervention. That's where the intervention comes in. Or maybe you call the police down the street because you already know that someone's being abused. That's intervention. Prevention is what we teach a lot on NASCA. And that is to, tell your children ahead of time, you know, tell them ahead of time about the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's the way I like to put it. Because quite frankly, we do not live in an innocent world. We have a lot of people out there who harm other people. And children, many times, whether it be children or even the elderly, the ones that are most likely, you know, who are easier to target, let's put it that way. And so they'll become, the target for a person who, say, with the children is the pedophile. So prevention is something I want you people to understand. My being a survivor of many types of abuse, the website is put together in such a way, the NASCA website, and that's www.NASCA.org. That's NASCA.org. And it's a wonderful website. And many times when I go out, and I was speaking a whole bunch a couple of years ago before all this pandemic and stuff hit, and going into churches, too. I wasn't just going into the universities. I was actually able to get into some churches and speak about child abuse. And so I would teach the people, I would talk to the people about prevention, okay? Even spoke to police departments. That was really cool. But anyway, and they took what I said back to the academy. So, you see, our website has a tremendous amount of, you know, information on it. And this is really a very good thing. So I'm hoping that that Tanisha is okay, because I spoke to her just a couple days ago, and she was looking forward to the show, and she wanted to know the exact time, and she's Eastern Standard just like I am. So I do hope she calls in. And she is a returning family member. Her domestic violence, she saw a lot of that as a survivor. She's also, this may be her now, so I don't have to tell her story. I don't want to. I heard tell her story. Hold on a second. Let me see who this might be. Tanisha, is this you?
Hi, yes.
Yes,
it's me.
Hi, honey. Yeah, tonight's the night. Tonight you're the superstar.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be on here. How y'all doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, honey. Yeah, I didn't know if you were calling, so I was getting ready to start my own show. So I'm glad you called in. I have your bio in front of me, and actually, I did start to read just a tiny bit, you know, of your bio. I didn't get very far because now you are here. So how are you tonight? You okay?
I'm doing okay. Yes, got off work and got the baby, and now here at home. So I'm doing okay.
Okay, that's good. Well, you're with me. You know you can relax. So there's, you know, but there's a lot of people out there, you know, that you know, a lot of times they're not NASCA, you know, family people. A lot of us hand out cards. I've handed out so many. I couldn't tell you how many hundreds I've handed out, and. We do at times have a lot of people who listen to the computer. They don't want to come on the panel because they're phone shy, they're bashful, whatever. Okay, so they listen to our stories, and you never know who you're going to get a hold of, who's going to really benefit from your story. But there's going to be people that will benefit. And actually, I'd forgotten your story until I read your bio today. I knew some of it, but not all of it. And you have a lot to offer, okay? So I'm so glad that you have called in. And then we'll talk about what you're doing today. And I've been following you on Facebook. We've been going back and forth, you and I, a whole bunch. And I see that you've done quite a few things which you might want to talk about, you know, at the end of your story, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So why don't you start telling your story? Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Tanisha Bankston, and I'm a mother of three children, and I'm a survivor of rape, incest, childhood sexual abuse, trauma, and domestic violence. And I lived in silence for 27 years until I was given the opportunity to speak and to share my story on NASCA. And I thank y'all for giving me that opportunity to share my story, because that's where I broke silence at. And when I rediscovered my voice, I haven't hushed since then, since January 3rd, 2020. And since I broke silence and started sharing my voice and advocating and just raising awareness, I've been speaking ever since. And I've spoken on over 30 different radio talk shows, TV talk show, and been in magazines. And like I said, just advocating, raising awareness, and getting the message out there. And God delivered me from my past September 4th, 2020, and I've done some things that I never done and never knew I had that in me, unleashed a lot of power that was within me, and I started speaking in tongues and praising God and shouting and praise and just doing all kind of different things. And the moment when I broke silence and as I continued to, you know, on that journey and walk with God. And so after that, my book was birthed. I wrote a book. I put my life story in a book, and my book was birthed May 21st, 2021. And I got a message from God saying that it's time to leave my job January of 2020. And I did just that, and I just started listening and being obedient. And I've just been on my healing journey because every day I feel like you heal every day. And I just want to continue to help people heal and begin on their healing journey. So I just pray that I'm helping somebody through my story, through my testimony. I know if I help one person, I know that I'm doing something. And I just always say, you know, I don't feel like, you know, God meant for any of the things that happened to me, but I do feel like, you know, what the enemy meant for bad, God turned it around and made it for good, because I'm able to use my voice to help so many other people. And, you know, there's just been so much. I've been doing a lot, like you said, since I broke silence and on my healing journey and getting ready to start a women's support group for survivors of sexual assault, getting ready to start my own podcast, and just, you know, getting ready to just walk into my purpose and continue to advocate and connect with people and help survivors and, you know, victims, and help other people as well to rediscover and find their voice. And, you know, the things that happened to me, I hate what happened to me, but I'm glad that I survived all that happened to me, because, you know, they didn't, people say, I don't know how you survived what you've gone through. I don't either. All I can say is God, because I don't know how I survived all the trauma that I've gone through, you know, from being raped at a little age of 5, 6, and continuing to be manipulated, molested, and raped at the age of 10, incest by my cousins and the family, age 11, it continued on, age 13, my cousin's husband ended up getting me pregnant. Age 14, I had the baby. Still at the age 14, I entered a domestic violence relationship. Was in that relationship from the age of, you know, 14 to 23 until I escaped. And been in some bad relationships to where I've been broken, beaten, and even to where I've been sent to the hospital and left for dead, strangled and choked and oxygen cut off, and just things, just all kind of horrible things that have happened to me. But to see and to be transparent and transition on the other side and see that I'm able to help someone else, that's just a beautiful thing. So I just pray that my story, my testimony is helping someone, and I pray I didn't trigger anyone by anything that I said on tonight. And I just, you know, just, that is my story, and that's it. And on this journey that I'm on, I want to, you know, help other people on that journey as well.
That's right. That's right. You know, Tanisha, I have your bio in front of me, and you have come a long way, honey, because of all the things that happened to you. And, you know, so many of us, we at NASA have gone through, you know, similar things. Some worse, some less, whatever. We don't take a measuring stick, you know, to see whose is worse or less, whatever. You know, we don't do that because trauma is trauma. Yeah. So maybe you could start out. It says here, I was taken away from my mom at age of 5. And talk about how you feel at kindergarten and why. And let's sort of, like, go from there, okay? So that people understand out there, understand your story. Okay, hold on. I have an area code number here, 619 area code. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, Carol. It's Regular Girl. Just joining in and listening. Thank you.
Okay, all right. So, yeah. So, anyway, we have one lady who's going to be listening, But I'm going to go to her every once in a while because I think she'll probably have something to say. This is a regular girl, and she's a NASCA family member also. Okay, so, yeah, start out at age five, and let's talk about that. I remember age five, too, and it was horrific. It was awful. Go ahead.
Okay, age five, I was taken away from my mom, separated from my sisters and my brother. I failed kindergarten, I believe it was because I know I missed over 60 days because I have my transcript from high school, and it says that I missed 60 days. But when I was raped by the first man, I had to spend so many days in the hospital because my mom said I had to relearn how to walk because the man, he had to strip me down there in my vagina area, and the doctor said that I wouldn't be able to have kids. And my mom said that I had to, like I said, relearn how to walk. I had to have those metal bracelets on my leg, helping me walk all over again. But he was never locked up because he said that he didn't do anything to me, which I know he did. What he did to me, I didn't know what the word rape meant at the age of 5 years old. And so, I failed kindergarten, and I just had a hard time in kindergarten focusing and concentrating. It's just like I felt a shift in my brain when after he raped me and I walked across the railroad tracks to my mom, crying out to her, telling her what the man had just done to me. And she called the ambulance, and before I was taken to the hospital, there was a shift that happened in my brain because I was once, even though I was little, but I was still a happy, outspoken little kid playing with my friends and cousins and everything. But when that happened to me that moment, there was like a light switch, just like a bulb. Like there was a shift that took place in my brain. And like I said, I just had a hard time focusing in kindergarten, school, not knowing why, didn't understand why, I couldn't focus or concentrate, didn't know what trauma was. I didn't know what rape meant or what rape was or anything like that. And so I was taken from and separated from my mom and my siblings and was placed with my aunt. She adopted me. And that's when the incest started there, with my aunt. I didn't tell my aunt, because when I spoke out when I was five, I was not believed. I say five or six, but I really believe it was 5 years old because I failed kindergarten. And I started kindergarten when I was five. And so I didn't say anything because I was afraid. And I didn't want, when I spoke out the first time, and then I lost my inner voice. I lost my voice because I know what had happened to me, and I didn't want my cousins to be like, I actually just wrote that down last week in my journal, in my diary. I write every day for him to say, well, she's just lying, and then me end up being taken away from my brother and separated and being placed somewhere else. I mean, I didn't understand all that at all when I was a kid, but now I understand it now. But all of that happened, and him coming into my room at night, funneling in my panties, and me thinking I was going to be protected and safe, but here it is. This is time it's my cousin doing these things to me, coming into my room at night, getting my foot, masturbating on his foot and everything until he masturbates and going inside my clothes and everything. And, it just continued to happen for years and years and years and years and years. And people ask now, why didn't you speak up? I spoke out when I was, five, but I wasn't believed. And so I was like, who's going to believe me now if I say anything? Like I said, my mom, she was in and out of my life because she was incarcerated. And most of our life, my mom had me when she was 16. She was just a kid herself, and she ended up having mental illnesses and her own trauma from the things that happened to her as well. when she was young and growing up and everything. And so, like I said, I stayed with my aunt after I was raped, and I actually confronted my rapist, and he said, I don't know why they saying I did that to you. And I'm like, I know this man did this to me. I know he was there. He was the person. I can see him. I still have nightmares from time to time, flashbacks, seeing this man and the things that he's done to me and everything. So that was that. And like I said, after
let me stop you for a minute there, Tanisha. What you're talking about, you know, it happened. It happened. And sometimes our mind, you know, wants to play games with us. And then when you have other people telling you that, well, maybe she was lying or all this other stuff, you know, kids do get confused. But you have something that's an ongoing thing, which is like flashbacks or nightmares and things like that. And it takes a very long time and a very good therapist to get over that stuff, okay? And I used to have all that too. And my abuse started at age 6, yeah, with the sexual. No, he didn't enter me, but he was on top of me. And he did it that way, okay? And, of course, he, you know, came all over me in plain English, and what a mess. And he wouldn't dare do that because my aunt, this was an uncle of mine, an aunt would see blood on the sheet, of course. She'd wonder where it came from and stuff. So they're very cunning, and they have ways of scaring children, too. You know, like in the sense of saying, if you tell, I'm going to kill the cat, or I'm going to kill the dog, or I'm going to kill you. And in my case, at the age of 6, I was living with these people. Didn't want to. I didn't want to go there, but I was pushed there by my mother. And he killed the bird. She had a family bird, my aunt. And that was to get control over me, too, to make sure that I wouldn't open up my mouth. Plus, he didn't like that bird. There were seeds on the floor, and she had trouble seeing. In those days, glasses were really, really thick, and I swear to God, they looked like Coke bottles. They did, you know. But she had trouble seeing, and so when she would vacuum, a lot of times she wouldn't quite get all the seeds up, and then he'd scream and yell. So between, you know, stuff that was going on in that house, that's why they don't always, you know, go inside of you, as you say. You had mentioned that. Yeah. So because they don't want to be found out. When we're so young, at the age 5 and 6 or 9, whatever it might be, a lot of times they find other ways by, you know, getting on top of you without actually, you know, entering you. Go ahead. I get it.
Right. And the first man, and that's what he actually did. Like, he got on top of me and he raped me and he forced himself inside of me. He ripped my legs open, ruptured me, and put his hand over my mouth. And so I couldn't scream. So I was trying to scream and was trying to kick, but, you know, he was so strong. And here I was, a little kid, and somehow I managed to kick him off of me. And I got up and I ran across the railroad tracks to my mom, crying and screaming to her. And people were sitting on the porch, and my mom was standing outside, and she asked, like, what's wrong with you? You know how you can just physically see things? Like how you can see it recurring, like how you can see it in your, what is that, PTSD? Where you can, like I see it, or flashback. I could actually, uh-huh, like, see it, uh-huh, and everything. And so, and I remember seeing blood on the sheet, like on the hospital bed, like how they have, uh-huh, you on the table. But, uh-huh, I just don't understand, you know, why he never got locked up. If all of this was there, and I'm saying that he did this to me, and I actually watched a movie last night on Netflix about this perpetrator messing with little kids and everything, and the lawyer defending the perpetrator, and they're them not wanting to believe the little kids, and I don't understand that. Like, I just don't understand it, like, because a kid isn't like they don't know to just, I feel like they don't know to just lie like that. If it happens to them, they know what happened to them. And some kids are scared to tell it. Some kids, you know, they do tell it. And everybody is different. And I told it when I was a kid, but I was told, I was called a liar. And I just made it up. It wasn't true. And I was taken from my mom.
That happens so often. You know, that does. It happens so often. Isn't it awful? Think about it for a second. A child is telling an adult, a trusted adult, it could be a parent or somebody else in the family that they trust, right? You know, what happened. And they don't believe you. You know what I'm saying? That is just so bad for the child. I hate that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's very bad for the child. Because the trauma that it causes and everything, as you get older into your teenage and your adulthood, if the trauma isn't resolved, you know, it causes all kinds of mental illnesses. Like, I've been diagnosed with anxiety, depression, PTSD, nightmares, and flashbacks, major depressive disorder, and I just feel like it all came from the trauma that was caused and the trauma that I endured as a child and not getting the help I needed, and I wasn't protected. I was not believed. I was failed. I was neglected. And you know, it just, I thought maybe I would be protected by being adopted by my aunt, but it was just like the wolves were like, they're waiting on me. Like, they sensed this vulnerable little kid. Oh, this happened to her before. I don't know how or what happened. But, you know, when I was 10 years old, one of my aunt's boyfriends started manipulating me and getting me to meet him through an alley and giving me $1 bills and change, like corn wrappers full of change, taking me to the old dog pound, laying me down on the ground, and he would have sex with me. And I would cry on the inside because I didn't know how to express feelings no more. I didn't know how to let tears roll down my face. I didn't know how to do anything. And after he got done having sex with me, he would tell me to go home and take a bath and don't tell anybody. Like I said, I already didn't speak up. When I did tell it the very first time, when I know, to this day I know what happened to me. And I wasn't believed. And when I broke silence 2 years ago on NASA and let everything out, I didn't know that I would get backlash from, you know, family, some of my family members, not all of them, but some of them, and some of the naysayers, for like friends of the family saying, oh, you lying, you're just a whore, you act for it, and you were just this little fast, B-I-T-C-H, you know, all of that hurt me because here it is, I'm already hurt because I was failed growing up by the system, failed by some of my family members. I didn't have my mom in my life because, you know, my mom was in and out of prison most of her life. Men, witnessing my mom get beat by men, and she actually ended up defending herself. But she was the one sent to prison for some years because the man beat her so bad with a broom until the broom handle broke on my mom, split in half. And she cut him, and he has a metal plate in his head right to this day. But I just felt like, you know, why did my mom have to go to prison for that? And this man didn't serve a day or time in jail or any of that. And so I just feel like the system is so broken and everything, and it's people are just failed by it. You know, the abuse just continued after the age of 10. When I was 11, another man from the neighborhood, he in the store, and he would, like, one morning he called me in there, but I was already in there. He told me, he said, Tanisha, you can get whatever candy you want. And so he told me to come to the back room. I didn't know how to say no. And he had a blanket already laying on the floor. Like, he knew what he was going to do to me. He knew. he was going to have sex with me. He knew. People say it's not just sex, Tanisha, it's rape, because you were 11 years old and he was in his 30s. He was grown. He was old enough to know better. But he forced himself inside of you and put his fingers inside of me, and he put out a condom and had sex with me. And he ruptured my anus. And, like, he ruptured my – he did all kind of horrible things to me and to my body. And that to this day I still have – you know, I have these scars from all the things that were done to me. He even had to the point had me to miss school. And a police came to the motel, found me in the room. I mean, he hid me in between the mattress, like between the box spring and the mattress. I was that little. I was 11 years old, probably weighing about 60, 70 pounds. And he was maybe 36-year-old grown man, because he's like 56 now and I'm 33. And he was just about to have sex with me. Only thing that stopped him from having sex with me was the police knocking at the door, because he had me to undress. So I was taken to the hospital where a rape kit was done on me, and he was taken to the police station. They took my clothes for evidence. They found a pubic hair from him that was on me. They got that, and they took everything, you know, they examined me and everything. They asked if he had sex with me, and I said no. And he was just about to have sex with me. And so I was then taken to the police station, questioning and everything. But they said that they had to let him go because they didn't have enough evidence to keep him. And I felt like, and I thought that he would stop having sex with me, you know, because he had been caught. But that didn't keep him from having sex with me. He kept having sex with me. He kept coming to my window late at night, getting me to sneak out of the window. And I could feel him some nights watching me while I sleep, because I don't understand why I didn't have like a blind or curtain, you know, at the window.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He would stand there and watch me. And I never understood, you know, why didn't I have a blind or a curtain at my window. And he would like peck on the window and have me. I have a scar on my back to this day from my back rubbing up against a brick wall, from him getting me to climb out of the window and him picking me up and holding my hand, this little girl, walking me to the train tracks or taking me to abandoned houses or his friends' houses. And he would have sex with me, you know, have sex with me on my cycle while I'm bleeding and everything, just doing all kind of, oh my goodness, oh, horrible things to me in my body. And and he just did that for years, and, you know, and it just kept going on, different men. Then at 13, I got pregnant by my cousin's husband. He was doing the same thing, and I mean, I don't understand why. It was like a circle of men. He did it, and I had my baby at 14. I almost died on the table having my baby because the doctor said my bones were not produced and I was not ready to be pushing out a 6-pound, 7-ounce baby, a baby period, because I was, like, not ready. I was just a baby myself. And so had my daughter at 14. A DNA test was done when I turned 15 because my baby was 1, and she started looking like my cousin's husband. And when a DNA test proved that he was the dad, I didn't even know who the dad was because, you know, all these men were having sex with me. And so the DNA test came back, his baby, and nothing was ever said or done. The judge, the people that swapped me and my baby and my daughter, dad, they never asked, why is this child in here with this grown man having a DNA test done? Nobody ever asked questions. Nobody from the school ever asked questions, because I was the only person in school pregnant. I was in sixth grade pregnant with my oldest daughter. And I never seen a counselor, therapist, or nobody ever asked me questions, baby, are you okay, or anything, like, did you meet nobody? And I just felt like I was still so horribly from, you know, especially from the system, the judge, the people, like I said, the swabbers, and even some of my family, when the DNA test came back, I didn't know how to read that DNA test. I mean, I could barely, like, read some stuff. I mean, so I had to have my cousin to read it, and it said that he was the father of my baby, and she even made a joke, you know. Like I said, I didn't know how to express my feelings, and I cried on the inside. It wasn't funny. She made a statement saying that, dang, y'all must have gotten it in really a lot because these DNA counts are, like, high. And I was just like, you know, why is she saying that? Why, you know, are they going to save me? Am I going to get help? Is this going to stop? Is he going to stop, you know, coming to my aunt's house, having sex with me while my aunt and her boyfriend are asleep? Is this going to stop? Is it going to stop getting me to meet him? Why is all of this happening to me? Why won't this stop? After I have my baby.
Hold on just a second. Yeah, it's terrible. Hold on a second, Tanisha. We have a 931 area code. Who am I speaking to? This is Carol Levine from the Stop Child Abuse Now show.
Darlene, big sis.
Well, how you doing there, by God? How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good. We have Tanisha on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She said we're there.
Tanisha. Yeah, hold on a second. We're right in the middle of her telling her story. This is Tanisha
right.
Bankston, and she's from Granada, Mississippi. I'm glad you called in. Thank you for that. You know, it's so awful. You know, now we have a little bit of a panel here. I say, yeah, it's so awful. It's so awful what children go through when people don't care or they don't believe them when they tell that they've been raped. And there was even evidence with her because at one point when she was in the hospital, there was blood on the sheet. I mean, why didn't people take more action? You know what I'm saying? She had her first child when she was 14. And her second one, she was 17, and she was being abused both times. So we're going to go back to that and because she's telling her story. So that's my answer to that to you, Tanisha. You know, the system is broken. You said it earlier. And I can't believe it's so hard to believe with all these terrible things you're saying, with your mother being in jail and you being with your aunt and other people in the family and the incest that, you know, transpired. And then also, too, people not believing you, you know, when the evidence, for God's sake, is right there, even in the hospital. You know, this is not right. This is not right. And this is why we fight so, okay? You have a tiger right here. I'm a tigress, okay? I'm a nut. And when I hear things like this, it makes me crazy. Some think I'm crazy anyway, especially Bill. He's on the other end. He's listening. But that's okay. But anyway, the point is, you know, we have a problem with the system. You're absolutely right. Because a child, because that's all you are at the age of 14, having a child, a child having a child. And then, of course, there are many of us, I'm not one of them, but there are many people, you know, because they are raped at such an early age, it causes terrible damage inside. So sometimes they're not even able to go full term, you know, to have a baby. Or if they do, their body is ruined inside. You have, you know, all kinds of scar tissue and all kinds of other things because when you're getting forcibly, you know, raped and all that stuff, it causes little, you know, all kinds of scraping and cuts and all kinds of things. And that also, too, gets in the way. So, you know, yeah. Well, you know that we believe you, and a lot of people believe you, too. So I just want you to know that, okay? It
Thank
says here
you.
I have family. Yes, honey. It says here I have family secrets, including incest. And she says she hopes telling her story will help to, you know, help her with her own past and also to help other people who are listening. And believe me, there are people, in, you know, who have the same thing that you do and did when you were having your children. Now, let me ask you something. When you were 17, who is it that you had your second child at the age of 17? Which one was it that actually raped you, and was it the same person, or was this someone new in the family?
No, this was someone new in the family. He lived around the corner from my aunt's where I was adopted. And one of my friends and I, we walked down the street, and he called me over there. And he had a pickle and a bag of hot chips, because that's what I used to like as a kid, a lot of pickles and hot chips, especially when I was pregnant with my baby. And so he must have been monitoring me, watching me to know I like pickles and a hot chip, and hot chips. And so he had that for me. He said, come in. And he asked me if I wanted to have sex. I didn't know how to say no. I didn't want to have sex. He had sex with me, and he asked if I wanted to be his girlfriend. No, I didn't want to be his girlfriend. Again, I didn't know how to say no. So I was 14, and he was 23 at the time. And so from then, age 14, up until age 23, it was like nothing but hell, because I moved out with my aunt. I believe I was 17 and got my first place right down the street from her. And it was hard with two kids and still just a kid myself, teenager. And so then after that, you know, he just started jumping on me. He was very abusive. He spit in my face. He told me I'd never be nothing. He would just hit me all in the head, jump on me, and just call me all out my name. You stupid, you B. You start telling people I had HIV, AIDS, so no one would want to talk to me. He set my furniture on fire, gave his sister my furniture, and just, you know, and had me put out of my place because he was jumping on me. So I called the police, and nothing was ever done. And they would make him leave, but he would come back, or he would come back and hide in my closet and just, you know, to just be there. So he would just continue to jump on me. He jumped on me in front of my kids. So my kids have, you know, grown up and seen domestic violence, all that trauma, and just he would have sex with me whenever he wanted to have sex with me. I just felt so nasty. He was an alcoholic. He would drink all the time. He would take the keys to my car, wouldn't show up and pick me up from work. He would dash beer on me, dash it in my TV, and just leave my door. You know, he was just doing what he wanted to do. You know, he was grown, and here I was, this kid, and I was scared. And when I even went to stay the night at my aunt's or whatever, because I was so scared. And I guess my aunt and some of my family member must have been afraid of him, because nothing was ever done. Like, no charges or anything was ever pressed on him, because when they found out it was going on, I had a diary. My family member said that my aunt told me, she said, I told you to leave those men alone, Tanisha. And I said, I was a kid. Those were grown men. I said, I did not want to be having sex with those men. I didn't want to do anything with those men, but I did not know how to tell them no. I said, I was scared. I said, nobody protected me. Didn't nobody protect me or anything. I was failed. And, you know, I ran off on her porch crying, and I almost had a wreck in my car because I went into, like, a daze, because I just, what she said, everybody still to this day, to this moment, make it seem like they say it's my fault because I wanted it. I knew better. And I should have said no. Even in my book, some of my family members that have read my book said that I did not give my aunt credit, that I'm blaming her for everything, and that, well, Tanisha, I knew to say no. I said when that happens to me, when they tried to do that to me, I told my mama. I said, everybody is not as strong as you, girl. I said, because when I spoke out the first time, I wasn't believed.
and I lost my voice, my inner voice. And if you hadn't gone through what I've gone through, you're not going to understand. You're on the outside looking in, just like other people are. And I know, like, some of my family or naysayers are going to probably listen to this, you know, recording, and I'm going to have some feedback and some backlash from it. But I had to like learn that it's okay because I'm free now. My mind that was once in prison for 27 years when all five of those men did what they did to me should have been in prison for 27 years. And the trauma that I have to suffer and endure from them and what they did, like, I just felt like they should have been the ones in prison. But I had to learn to let go and trust God, because as long as I kept holding on and not forgiving them, I couldn't move. I was stuck. And I had to forgive myself, because I just felt like, you know, I started feeling like, you know, it was my fault. Tanisha, why weren't you strong enough? Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you tell anybody, even when you spoke out the first time? Why? All the why.
I'll tell you why. Well, when my brother was molesting me, and then he started at the age of 9, or I was 9 years old, rather. He was 5 years my senior. But by the time that 14 came around, he actually raped me, okay? Look, molestation and rape, to me, they're the same. They're the violation of against our bodies, okay? And so the one equally as bad as the other. Now, I told my mother when I was 9 that he was, you know, fondling me and doing things that he shouldn't be doing. And she said, oh, things like that happen in families, and that was the end of that. Well, by the time I was 14, with many years there in between, all right, yes, until 14, he actually kept it up with his molestation and all this other stuff, and I kept saying no, 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 and no, and he didn't hear me, he didn't care, and he was forceful. And then at 14, yes, he raped me. I did not get pregnant. However, I didn't tell my mother. What for? And it's not ever because I thought it was right. It's because I knew I wouldn't be heard. And a lot of times in cases like ours, when you do make that step forward and you do tell, you know, your parent or someone else you might trust or whatever, and nothing happens, then you don't tend to tell. So I get it. I'm going to go to Darlene here, and she's heard enough now where she gets the idea, and I'd read a little bit of that, and then I'm going to go up to Regular Girl and see if she does want to say something. Darlene, do you have anything you'd like to ask or make a comment about what you've heard so far?
Well, I know so much about Tanisha's life and everything. I'm sure y'all talked about for the first time about when she had to go to the hospital because she couldn't walk because of it. And for nobody to do anything but call her a liar. Then she goes, and when she gets older, and tries to tell, and still nobody believes her. Cops don't do nothing. So what do you do? Everybody said, why didn't you tell? Why didn't you tell? Well, yeah, don't you think the hospital knew? Didn't you think that a whole bunch of other things knew, the cops knew? They did nothing, so excuse me, why didn't they enact and do something about it? That's who I blame. I'm sorry. I'll get a little bit of that.
She and I are getting mad. We're getting mad. Well,
yeah.
You know, look, the blood's right there. Where did they think it came from, the sky or something? I don't get it. You know, that was years before. I mean, this is awful, okay? It makes me mad. It makes me want to fight even harder. And Darlene's the same as I am. She'd want to fight harder, too, just knowing this story. And there's a lot of people out there that are really angry right now at the system and the hospital. Because when a child comes in and they're bleeding from, you know, the vagina, there's a problem. And then also, too, with your pregnancy, let's think about that for a minute. The doctor knew that there was something wrong inside of you. You know, that you had problems, you had issues. And that comes from abuse, okay? So he didn't say anything, and he's a mandated reporter. course. I don't know how long ago that was exactly. Maybe they didn't consider things like that back then. I don't know. You're not very old. I saw pictures of you. We go back and forth online. But, you know, the point is someone should have said something, you bet. And so after a while, you know, if no one, with all these people involved that we just spoke about, not one of those people took it upon themselves. Now, if it's just family, and don't get me wrong about this, a lot of times family don't want that information to leak out because they don't want people to look down on them or say, oh, incest and all this other stuff, which is ridiculous. Incest is incest. Today we were able to speak about it better. But, you know, some years ago we couldn't, you know, or we wouldn't. Let's just say we wouldn't. Today we do speak about it pretty freely. So, you know, we're getting better as far as I think probably maybe hospitals are better with things like that. And there are certain organizations, you know, that are better with things like that, you bet. So things, but that didn't help you back then. Just like it didn't help me, help me back when I was 17 and I did get pregnant. And because I was raped again at 17, the other times were molestation with other people. And then, of course, when I was 6, living in Staten Island and in the pedophile house at 7 and a half, up to 7 and a half, and then 8 years old, I was raped in Staten Island. There's just so many times you lose track, for God's sake. Well, that guy didn't go to jail, you know, who raped me in the pedophile house, and that was for 1.5 years. No one went to the police. Tanisha, no one said anything. See, that's what I'm talking about with family, okay? Yeah. And so then the second time of the episode when we went back to New York and lived there in Staten Island, I was kidnapped and raped. That guy was caught. And people know on the show it was one of 14. And he only got 3 years, and he was out in 1.5 years. But 14 little girls. So you see, this is the system. And so much has to be changed. It's just disgusting. Let me go up to Regular Girl and see if she wants to talk. Hold on a second. Do you want to speak? You have anything you want to say?
Hi. Yes, I would like to comment.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you so much. And good job. Good job, Tanisha. It's nice to meet you. Because here's what I really am strongly impressed with in this work is that you lived to tell, you see. You lived to tell. And you lived with the memory of it that's able to tell the details of it. And that's why, of course, the statute of limitations laws need to be changed. What struck me is that we all have different stories, you know. There are so many different stories. There are many ways to tell a story also, but that we really are these unique snowflake individuals, and that's important. It's important in listening to all the different stories because then the common threads begin to expose themselves, you know, these common threads, common themes. But it's also the memory of like what you have contained through like yours. What I was struck with in your story was it's like, and it changed my perspective on maybe to change this outlook on who we are in this work now, to change that perspective a little. It's like you really were, as a soul, like in the pits of hell, you know, like you went in there and you said, I'm going to remember this. And we do. Trauma survivors have this phenomena of frozenness in memory. So that's a separate topic, maybe in a different, you know, they've done different studies beginning to do on that kind of thing, that term frozen, you know. So we have a frozenness in our memory that maybe people without trauma don't have. But that then you lived to tell about it in such a vibrant way, you see, and that's so necessary for this work, right? So it's almost like you were like a spy going in there, because these people do their evil deeds in secret. We all know that. They do these things when they think nobody's looking, you know? So in a way, but only if you can retain the memory like you did, you know, we can start to expose. But we, in a sense, if you look at it like that, it gives me a sense of control. Not that I do have it, you know, that we were like little spies in a way. Jesus's spies. A bad way to say it, maybe, but I'm just trying to get a concept across. And it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for sharing. You're very brave.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, she is very brave. I'm sitting here thinking, but the guy that kidnapped me, there was blood in my underwear. That's right. And that was a 7.5. 7.5, yes. Yeah, you know, when years go by, I don't think about the past so much anymore. I just simply don't, because we can't fix that damn thing, you know. We can't fix the past. So I have to start, you know, thinking, okay, Carol, get your facts straight with the ages, because I don't think about it anymore. But, you know, this is something that you don't just get over. I mean, it mentions in your bio here that, you know, you just want to be happy. And we're not going to get our childhood back. Absolutely not. There's no way we're going to get that back. And it does affect our adulthood. I used to be so filled with anger. All right, I wanted to shoot him, kill him, stab him, something, twist their head around like The Exorcist, like I always say, you know, do something, because of what happened to us, you know, because they're not feeling anything, honey. Okay, they're not, but we are, because we were at that time the victims. And then we take that victimhood into our adulthood until we heal. And that's why when I tell my story now, or I have to really look back, because I think I've pushed it out. You know, like I wrote my book, I pushed it out, it happened, it was disgusting, shame on them, shame on the system, shame on a lot of things. But like Regular Girl just said, well, you know, we did, all of us, the three of us on here, this right here, you know, we did live to tell about it. And we are the ones, and I believe this, we the survivors are the ones that are going to make a difference. And we're going to put that dent in the statistics by prevention, intervention, and recovery. And we speak about those three things, teaching people. But also, too, with our stories, they don't feel alone anymore. There's people listening now. You know, I can't see their names, but I'll find out later on by looking at a graph how many people are listening. You can get an idea. And, you know, the point is the ones who don't know enough about child abuse, this teaches them by you telling your story with the sexual abuse. And then also, too, there are an awful lot of survivors out there, an awful lot of survivors who aren't really on their healing journey, especially men. A lot more men are coming out now and speaking out. This is good. The last couple of years, a lot of guys have come on our show. If you look through the archives, you'll see that there's a lot of men that have been on. And they feel the same way we do. You know, look, abuse is abuse, rape is rape, and that's the way it is. You know, and I'm so sorry you had to go through all this, and it just makes me mad. Now, it says here that, by the way, when I was 17, I said I had gotten raped again. I did, and I did get pregnant, not at 14, at 17, and I had a miscarriage. So the way I look at it is I have a baby somewhere up in heaven, and I just know I'm going to go to heaven. There's a baby up in heaven there. Waiting for me, okay? That's the way I look at it. But anyway, yeah, continue on. Because talk about what happened to you. You know, when did you start feeling like you wanted to change your life? You speak from 14 to 17. What is it that got you to the point where, was it your therapist? How did you move forward? How did you start to move forward?
When I started getting, like, suicidal thoughts. Mm-hmm. And from everything, just isolating myself in my room and crying all the time, depressed, just wanting to give up. And so I reached out to this group. I just posted, I started Googling groups on Facebook, And I joined a mom support group for women dealing with kids with ADHD. And so I said how I was having problems with my teenagers, and I needed some help. I needed somebody to talk to. And the lady, she ended up sending me like some resources, and I inboxed her, and I told her that, you know, I was a survivor and what all I've survived, and she told me about NASA. And so I reached out. I think I shared what I've gone through on NASA website, on the page, the support group, the closed one and the public one. And then my life just changed. That's what I always tell people. NASA, you all saved my life, and the lady who gave me the resources and the mom group for moms dealing with kids with ADHD saved my life, because, you know, I already didn't have that support from my family. I always felt like I was the black sheep of the family, going around my family, but hurting on the inside, you know, faking it to make it, because I had no one else. I didn't have any friends because I was bullied growing up. I was bullied growing up because of my smile. I had very low self-esteem, and kids would always pick on me and say, you know, Tanisha's got a baby, or Tanisha likes to have sex with grown men. And, you know, just everything started hitting me. And all my jobs, I was being bullied so bad. And but the suicidal thought, that's when I knew. I was like, I have kids. My kids, they need me, so I need some help. And that's what made me, like, start to reach out. And but the moment, I was so scared to speak on NASA. I was so scared. I just started getting anxiety real bad. But the moment I did it, it was just like making that leap that I was being hurt, you know, and the fact that I was being told that I believe you, Tanisha, if nobody else believes you, I believe you, and to know that it was not your fault. And I needed to hear all that, and I want other people to know that it's not their fault. What they've gone through or what people are going through, it's, you know, it's not their fault. It's not your fault. It's not any of us, our fault. Like you said, it's not our fault. These predators, they're sick in the head. They were grown. They knew better. And they took advantage of a child, a vulnerable child, and everything. And so I just, it just hurts so bad because, you know, like I say, I'm healed in a lot of places, but I feel like you never stop healing. Every day you're healing, every day, because, you know, this is trauma that happened. My childhood was taken away from me. It was stripped away. It was stolen. I didn't have a childhood. I didn't play with Barbie dolls. I had a real-life baby that I had to take care of at the age of 14. I remember getting on the school bus and putting my baby on the school bus first for Head Start, and me getting on the big bus. But
you know, I think it when we get raped and we have children, you know, for the most part, if they don't, you know, give the child up, I'm a product of rape. I didn't find this out until many years later. Okay, this is why my mother despised me so, and. Now it kind of like makes sense. However, don't take it out on me. I didn't ask to be born, right? So, but I mean, with most people, I'm not going to count my mother because she was a bad mother. She really was. She used to tell me she was a witch, and I believe her. Okay, we'll leave it at that. But anyway, the point is something sparked in you, okay, that, you know, hey, look, I have a child, and this child needs me. And the mother instincts came out in you, okay? And they were good instincts. All these horrible things that you went through, you were trying to deal, you know, with that, all of those things too. And yet you knew that there was a little kid that needed his mommy, okay? Absolutely. And you were able to do that. You were able to put your child first. And I commend you for that. There are some people that can't do that. All they focus in is on their own hatred, say, of the person who raped them. Now, I understand they hate them for that. I get it. But they don't think about the child. The child then is just, like, pushed off to the side, cast out, whatever, and made to feel that way. But I have a funny feeling that you're a very good mother. I believe that. And, you know,
yes,
I can sense it. And just by a couple of things that you said shows that you're a good mother. You were able to put your child first and understand the need of your child to have a good parent. And that's very, very important. So you're going to have a close bond with your child. You absolutely know.
I pray every day, but there's not. She hates me. She's 19 years old. She hates. Like, but her and her dad, they have a relationship, a bond. It's like everything is my fault. No matter what I say, she says I have never been there for her. I didn't teach her anything, that she had to learn everything on her own. She says she feels like she's out here on her own. She's a freshman at Ole Miss University. And I'm like, what did I do wrong? Why am I being blamed? Like, why does she hate me so bad like this? I thought...
Probably because things are being said to her, honey, okay? Because you know how family is. You know how they are. Instead of supporting someone in the family, sometimes, you know, and that's why I focus in on the family issue so much like I did before. Either the family's with you or they're against you, okay? That's the way it seems to be. And so that's why those comments came out to you. Well, why didn't you say something at the age of 14, you're old enough, or 17, whatever? Because of the family. They have issues, too. Maybe they didn't go through the same things you did. But, you know, they have their own issues that aren't, you know, they're not stable. Because family that is stable should certainly take care of a child who's been so sexually abused, like even in my case, and Darlene's got her stories, and you know, on it goes, you know. We need to have our family behind us. We absolutely do, but we don't a lot of times. So if a child, you wait, give her a few more years, okay, because quite frankly, she's still young, and, you know, as time goes by, And do you see her a lot or not?
No, because every time we're around each other, we clash. It's like she just starts with me for no reason. It's just, I can feel the energy. You know how you can feel the energy, negative energy from somebody? It's like that discernment energy. And that's the energy that I get from her. It's like, she just hates me for nothing. I tell her all the time how much I love her, but she tells me all the time that I've never done anything for her, I've never been there for her. And I'm like...
But that's not true.
I
know you've been there for her.
Been there day one. And even when I was 14, I didn't know what I was doing. I had to be taught how to change a pamper. I didn't know any, you know, I didn't have my mom, my dad in my life. I didn't grow up in a two-parent home. I didn't grow up with my mom, my dad. I feel like he gave up on me when he found out I was pregnant with her, and I did not abort her because I didn't have an abortion with her. I kept her. The nurse said that having an abortion, there's a chance you may not be able to have kids when you get older. And I knew I wanted to have kids when I got older, and I didn't want to, you know, be killing my baby, And I didn't abort her, but I thought I would have the little girl of having a bond. But it is totally the opposite, and it hurts too.
Of course it does.
Hurt.
Let me ask you something. When, as she was growing up, okay, as she was growing up, and school has school pictures, okay, and I'm sure that you took your own pictures of her, and did she have birthday parties and stuff like that? Did she? You know, the things, the normal things that kids have. Did she have those things?
She had yes, birthday parties. I put her in cheer. I put her in soccer growing up and around other kids. And
well, you sit her down then, honey. You sit her down then. You know, like what I would do, I'm just telling you what I would do. This is what I would try to do. I would sit my child down. And all these things that you're coming forward with, you know, the things that you have done, the next time she says, you didn't do anything for me, I think you should bring out, you know, have the pictures nearby and show them to her and say, this is when this happened. This is when this happened. Do you remember this time? Do you remember this time? I would start, you know, feeding her a little positives. Look, this is what we did together. This is what Mommy did for you. Mommy was there. I would do that. And you'll know when the time is right. You'll know when the time is right. I can't tell you when to do that. But, you know, the day will come. It's like the day came when I actually went to my mother and said, you knew I was being abused. And while I was in that house, the pedophile house, you were out there running around with my stepfather here. You know what she did? She said, oh. The dummy speaks, right? The dummy speaks. That was me, the dummy. She started treating me a little different after that. You know, it's too bad. So I should have opened up my mouth sooner. See, that's why I'm telling you, okay, to, if you have all these wonderful pictures you speak about, you know, to look for them and have them ready, have them nearby. And don't get angry. Instead, just sit down, pour a cup of coffee or whatever you drink, and say, here, I have things to show you, and then start pointing it out. This is because Mommy was there, and I'm here now, too. I want to get Darlene on. Excuse my voice. Hold on. Dingity dang. Hold on. Darlene, speak. You there? Darlene? Regular girl, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm here.
I don't know what happened to my throat. Holy crap.
I'm here.
Darlene, if you're there, say something.
Hello?
Oh.
Hello?
Okay, maybe you have a comment you want to make. I don't know what happened to my throat all of a sudden. I'll be right back. Talk.
Darlene, are you going to talk? Are you muted? I heard you just a few minutes ago. Oh, maybe that wasn't Darlene. What I loved about your sharing this is because I feel so, I've heard so few, it's like you really shared honestly what your daughter who's upset with you said to you in this very open, honest way. That's what I heard. I could feel it even. And we all know that this thing is passed down, you know, from generation to generation. And so it's important to talk about it. And it's difficult, though. So what I want to say also is that I think as you continue on this your journey of recovery, you know, and making efforts to go, just to move forward in that way for yourself, it's going to affect your relationship with your daughter. To just start off that way, I can almost promise you that, you know, it's pretty amazing. So what you're doing here tonight is it's changing you. You know,
Regular girl, I'm not sure what happened to Carol, but Darlene did drop. Her call did drop.
I'm here, Bill. Swallowed wrong.
Okay, that's good.
I had a cough drop in my mouth. I went down a long way. I thought I was a goner, by God. Okay, I'm back.
And do we know who 219 is? 219? Yes.
No, because I was going into the other room, getting that cough drop down. All right, let me see.
Okay, let me find out then. Go ahead and start. Continue the show.
Yeah, I'll take care of it. It's all right. 219 area code. This is Carol Levine from the Stop Child Abuse Now show. Who am I speaking to?
Oh, this is Benny.
Hi, Benny. Welcome to the show.
Good. I just wanted to make a comment.
Okay, we'd like that. Go ahead.
I just want to say the show is, like, I'm really into it. And, you know, especially when you talk about the suicide, you know, the past, like, I understand that, like, completely, because the past, like, for me, it kind of put you, like, in a sandwich bag and somebody zip-tied it, and you have to live like that. And so it took a long time to get out of that bag. But, you know, when you were talking about relationships with your children, what I found, even with me, was that I didn't want to, like, point fingers at my children. I did this. What I just found out, you know, I got some good advice from somebody, was you be the rock of love no matter what. Not, you don't parent with emotions. You just parent with love. And, you know, it took a long time, but it worked. And I just wanted to, you know, offer if that helps at all.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that too. That's why I said before, I was choking to death. Good grief. To be calm when you speak to her. Just have the things ready, you know, like the pictures, and have them, you know, right there so that you can, you know, so that you can say, look, remember this time? Do you remember this time? Well, who was with you? Mommy was with you. I was here with you. Your mother was here, all right? And that way, I think Benny is quite right, and I thank him for calling in. And, you know, it's so there's another person who has the same idea, you know, to be calm when you do it, because there's been too much bitterness, you know, maybe too much yelling. And if you sit down calmly with a person, they're more apt to listen to you. And if you have the proof right there in front of you, like the pictures that you might have, that's something where you can say, well, here, I can show you myself, okay? So that's good. That's good.
Right, thank you.
And the day will come. The day will come, honey. Don't forget, she's still very young, okay? She can be dealt with yet. And you're certainly not old. I'm sorry I didn't speak up sooner to my mother. Okay, I think that's when I swallowed the cough drop the wrong way. But anyway, you know, maybe I should have said something much sooner so that healing could take place, because healing never happened in my case, okay? So in your case, if you bring it up, and you know, and you'll know, like I said, you'll know when the time is right. You'll know when that time is right. You know, you sit down and talk quietly with her and show her things. That's what I would do. Yeah. And you see, you're lucky. You have pictures. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, it's like I can say something to her or suggest something. Like, she wrote in her diary and said, well, Mama want me to do this certain way. Well, Mama has never been in my life to show me this or that. And I'm like, child, I've been here day one. What is it that you're holding on and that you have against me? You know, I'm your mom. I've been here day one. I mean, I don't understand. And she says I want her to do things my way. She says I'm trying to live my life through her because I didn't have a childhood or life. But that is not true. That is not true at all. I tell my kids I want them to have a better life than I had, because I had a horrible childhood, a horrible life. I am just now starting to do things.
Well, you know, let me tell you something. I have grandchildren, okay? I'm thankful that I have grandchildren. And I have two kids that turned out fine. And that's amazing. And a miracle in itself, okay? They didn't always have easy times of it either, because I chose so poorly, you know, with husbands, okay? Simple as that. Didn't have any role models. And you didn't have any role models either. This is what we do so often. We choose the wrong people, you know, to be partners with, or to be husband and wife with, whatever. And but with my children, they grew up, didn't get into trouble. They always knew I was there for them, and that I loved them no matter what. And they have their children, so I have grandchildren. I have great grandchildren too now, and I told them to slow down. Because that makes me feel like a dinosaur, okay? But anyway, I laugh when I say it. But, you know, that's a blessing. It's a blessing. Because you know what I'm doing? I'm living my life. Now, if you want to say living your life through, okay, I'm living my life with my grandchildren. My great-grandchildren are really young yet. But, you know, But I'm living my life through them and a little bit with them, you know what I'm saying? There's nothing wrong with that. When I see my great-grandchildren, you know, I'm so happy to see them. I have a bum arm right now, so I can't push them on the swings and things like that, you know. But the point is, you know, I am there for them, and we clown around, we tease, they run, they play, they have bubbles, they have all these things that we didn't have when we were little kids, because we didn't have a childhood. It was taken away from us. It was robbed from us, okay?
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with enjoying your grandchildren, and with me, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, you know, all this other stuff. And it's actually healing. It's helping to heal me to be able to run with them and to, you know, to play with them. You know, they're there. Watch them play ball, all kinds of silly stuff, all the things kids do. You know, and yes, they know more than I do already on the computer. Oh, no. They're being taught all this stuff, all the electronics. And it's just like they say, when the parents
hey.
Don't know something, they go to their kids.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hello?
Darlene? Yeah?
Yes. Yes.
What happened
I'm
to you?
I'm still here. I got kicked off a while ago.
I didn't know what happened. You were on hold all of a sudden. I don't know. I didn't know what happened. So, I was saying, when I was choking on my cough drop, I was saying, speak, speak.
And
oh,
I was like,
God.
Hey, hey. And I was saying, hey, now, I'm not a dog to say, speak, speak. I don't know what I was just talking about. And
well,
the phone was,
yeah.
just didn't let me.
Well, I had to leave the phone
me.
For a minute. Yeah, I had to get that straightened out in my throat there because I swallowed wrong. But anyway, the point is, with Tanisha, that's a shame that she's going through that with her daughter right now. But I think if it's handled well in time, and she'll know when that time is, you know, she can sit down and have these pictures ready. Like I said, you have pictures, okay? Put them in front of her and say, here, what about this? Remember this time, things like that. That's what
Tanisha.
I would do. Go ahead.
Tanisha, I know that she's around your ex-husband a lot, you know, around the daddy. And so she's been brainwashed a lot, okay? So she's saying some of the old stuff that's been ingrained in her, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I want you to know also that my brother wrote at YouTube about me when I did my story on the Miss Texas show, and he wrote on there that, oh, he almost took out an eye for me and all this other kind of stuff, but no, I won't do nothing for him, which means I won't be silent. It means be silent. He said, I won't do nothing. And he goes, you never done that before me. You trying to do that guilt trip, the same thing, you know. Don't they want me to shut up about the parents and stuff, okay? I just noticed when you said that, I was like, that's the same thing my brother said.
So there you go.
But don't lose your voice, girl. Do not lose it.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Do you know that we only have like 4 or 5 minutes left? The show went
so fast.
Yeah, because I'm looking at my, I know my computer clock is off by about 4 or 5 minutes. So you told your story very, very well. And what you're experiencing now is not that terribly uncommon because these things happen in families. And between my two children, I had a little problem with my son, thinking that maybe I could have done more, in the marriage and as a family, until he spoke to his biological father. And he hadn't spoken to him in many years. He wasn't in their lives at all. So he found them online, and they had a conversation on the phone. And he said, David, it was not your fault. Michelle, it was not your fault. And it wasn't even your mother's fault. She was a good mother. And he said, it was my fault. So I sort of like forgave him for all the wrong that he had done to us. Because that was like him saying, you know, I'm sorry. Now, things do happen in life, you know. And he came from a bad background, too. Again, we're like magnets. We don't know how to choose properly, right? So, you know, the day will come when you can sit down with your daughter and speak to her. And what Darlene just said and what I've said. And don't be on the defensive because you know you tried your best to be a good mother, okay? You had given so much attention to your daughter, something that I never had. And Darlene was having all kinds of problems, too, with right attention from people that we should have had it from. So, you know, it'll come out. It'll cleanse itself. You'll see. And you'll know when the time is right. Now, we have 2 minutes left. What would you say to the people? There's a 207 area code number here. I'm not too sure who that is.
Hi, I just want to say to Tanisha, this was beautiful. It's nice to hear your voice. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know. It's nice to hear your voice. We're friends on Facebook, and your other daughter, I guess Chloe, is just a ray of sunshine seeing pictures. And it's you know, you said you didn't have your voice. Well, you have it now. It's great to hear it. It always is in the connections. So I just want to thank you. You did a beautiful job. It's compelling. And it's beautiful. You got a lot of years. You're only 33. You got a lot, God willing. You have many, many years left. And life is grand. So.
Right. Tanisha, this was for you. I didn't know if she was talking to me or you. She didn't say.
I was talking to Tanisha.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much.
Now she got. Now, everything she said, Tanisha, was meant for you. There you go. And she thinks that
you're a
beautiful person. You've got yourself together. Okay. And like I'm saying, too, why, with your daughter, that, too, will be okay. You'll see, this, too, shall pass. I say that at times, and there's a reason for that.
True.
Okay.
I hope so,
because
I really want a relationship with my daughter.
It's going to happen, and you'll know when the time is right. We can't tell you when that time is, but you'll know when that time is right. Okay?
Right.
And we're always here. You know, we're always here for you to talk to. You know about the contact list. I'm the night owl. I'm up until all hours, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Okay? So, but anyway, you know, if you need to speak. So I'm going to have to end this show. I'm sorry I almost choked to death, but that was weird. But anyway, we had a very good show, and it was a very heartfelt show. You know, it was, you touched a lot of emotions with a lot of people. I know you did. And thank you so much for coming on. And God bless you.
Well,
okay, God bless everyone
me.
On this show. Yes. And, you know, don't be a stranger. You can call in Monday through Friday. You know the drill. So call in and be on the panel, okay, when you want to.
I will.
Okay, sweetheart. Thank you so much. Yes, thank you so much.
Thank y'all so much.
Okay. Well, everybody, we had a good show, great show. Good night now, and God bless.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's on the